Two oh, seconds, okay, my computer's just broke here.
What a fucking amateur.
I know.
You're so unprofessional, though.
I mean, what one thing is as well, I forgot what I was going to say.
Sorry, that was me rambling on there.
No,
Board, AGM, Norman Crichton, let's keep going, what could it be?
Oh no, oh, I can't remember. Right, that's
doesn't it. Matter.
Yeah, it must have been Pish, so.
Must have been. I am a Pish.
And.
Fucking pecking away there, though, eh? Can hear the keys getting smashed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for waiting, sure.
I was waiting for somebody there. Welcome to the next edition of the Are You Ready podcast. As usual, myself, the host, Derek, and with my other co-host, Dave.
Good evening, Derek, and we're privileged to be joined by someone else this evening. Do you want to do the big introduction?
I will do. I think we're bumming it up a wee bit too much here now. We have back with us this week, we've got John. How are you doing, John?
Very well, guys. Thanks for once again having me on. It's a pleasure.
Not at all, not at all. Was always happy to have another voice before here.
Yeah, so it's always good to have somebody that can maybe talk some sense, because we just talk utter shite on here, but there you go.
Anyway, there's a lot to get on about, as usual, Rangers. That was never an easy story with us, so we're just going to hammer right on, and we're going to go down the tunnel and onto the pitch. Right, so the first game was Wednesday the 6th of November. It was at home to Dunfermline, and myself and John had the privilege to go along to that game.
That's right, yeah. It was a lovely, cold Glasgow evening, and we witnessed the game. I'm sure you'll go into it in great detail just now.
Yeah, so, I mean, John, you were a wee bit late coming in, weren't you, in the car? So we missed the first 5 minutes of the game.
We did, yes, and... obviously, as everyone's probably aware, the signal about Ibrox Stadium for like phones and stuff like that is non-existent. So couldn't phone you. You were waiting at the John Gregg statue, and so yeah, we were about 5 minutes late for the game. I think as we entered the stadium, it was just as Lee McCulloch was coming off the pitch with his injury.
It was, yeah. Anyway, just before that, I mean, I did get to join in with the Sons of Struth in March before the game, which was great. We started off at the Copeland Road end, walked around maybe about half an hour before the game, and there was a protest outside the main entrance. There was maybe about 200 or 300 people there. It was well observed anyway from what the reports were and from what I experienced as well. And you've probably seen the pictures and the updates I put on just after the game as well. One maybe disappointing thing about it is there's a lot of people just walking by, and you know, it's one of these things where I think that surely people know by now what the issue is with the board, and I would like to see a wee bit more. Certainly in the next game we talk about, that was on the Saturday, there was a lot more from the pictures, a lot more people there, but certainly it was a wee bit disappointing that way, but it was still good to anyway, nonetheless.
As you said, they'll getting the better turnout in the Saturday game just there. I think it's going to hopefully amp up so that maybe the next few games that the word will get out, and you know, they can have a better turnout and more fans can really have their say.
Mm-hmm.
We've spoken about this before, Derek. You know, we've got a lot of fans that go to the games that are a good bit older than us, don't really access much of the social media side of things, so maybe a lot of people didn't know about it at the time, and possibly with, you know, people passing by and seeing the protest, have, you know, been able to join in and you know, create a bigger protest for the second game. You'll probably find that that's what's happened.
Yeah, certainly. One note though, on a Wednesday night, we had 43,000 fans in the stadium, which was absolutely fantastic.
Superb.
And there was a comparison to the Champions League games were on that night as well. There was a comparison to Stamford Bridge, where obviously Chelsea were playing at home. They only managed 40,000 fans. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's excellent. It's a great turnout, and it's one thing we've been consistent. You know, be going to support the club. It's been absolutely brilliant. So well done everybody that attended, including you two.
Anyway, the team was three changes to the team that played last. We had Bell, Wallace, Mojny, Jigg, Foster, Templeton, Law, Black, Peralta, Daly and Little. Now Little was in for Clark, Black came back for Hutton after his suspension, and Templeton was in for the injured McLeod. On the subs bench we had Simonson, Clark, Crawford, McLeod even though he was slightly injured, Hutton, Forey and Aird. So what was your memories of the first half, John?
Well, I'd imagine they'd be pretty similar to your own memories, Dale. We weren't the best in the first half, not a lot of opportunities, a bit turgid to be honest. What I remember more than anything, any of the football that was played, was the referee's performance. He had a bit of a shocker, not only in the whole game, I think especially the first half, but the game itself, first half, you know, although we made two or three chances here and there, we sort of made hard work of it, much as we have been doing, I think, the last few weeks. I think you noted last week in the podcast, at times it's been games of two halves where we've not played well in one particular half, and I think that it kind of followed through in the midweek game. We weren't particularly great.
I mean, I think we certainly had the better of the half, just the lack of invention in the final third of the game. There was too many long balls to no one. There was a severe lack of movement. There was a lot of shouts from the crowd saying, we'll bloody move for them and things like that. Apart from two bits of skill, Templeton had an absolute shocker of a first half. Black's passing going forward was woeful. And as John said, Dunfermline were disgraceful. They were putting in rough challenges. I mean, John mentioned we had just gone into the stadium as Jigg was walking off. Now I watched that back again on RTV, and it was just a clear blatant elbow by the Dunfermline player, which he got booked for, but obviously we found out that he was the guy who brought down Jigg in the box in the second half, and that he got himself sent off. But for me it was a clear red card straight away. There was a few other dirty bits and play pieces in the game. Foster had to come off with an ankle injury where he came in and go, he got hacked down, there was no foul, and then the ball played onto Clark, and then Clark got hammered in the same passage of play. The Dunfermline player got the yellow card, but there was no punishment for the Dunfermline player on the challenge on Foster. The one downside to the first half certainly was Little getting stretchered off, and it looked pretty serious from what we seen anyway.
Yeah, it didn't look good. I mean, I think we were all kind of unsure as to what had happened, but having looked back at it on the highlights, he's obviously went in for a header, and him and the Dunfermline defender have basically clashed heads, and it looks like a really sore one. And if you've seen the pictures that he's tweeted afterwards, he's got some severe swelling on his face, so it's not been a pretty one for Little. But I think, like you said, Dale, just in the first half, Dunfermline, very physical team, and they were putting it about, and like you say, I think that the challenge on McCulloch, you know, where he got the stitches, you know, the guy was leading with his elbow, I think he really should have been red carded at that point. I mean, fair enough, he did eventually get the red card later on, but it really should have come in the first half, because mm-hmm. It was a shocking challenge.
Certainly. I mean, the thing about Little was that it wasn't a dirty piece of play from Dunfermline. It was just one of these things that Little went in up for the challenge in the box. He actually got a great header on the ball and forced a great save for the keeper. But in the process, you've seen the still picture in the media, and he had obviously headered, followed through and headered the guy's head as well. And as you said, it did look like a really sore one.
It was nasty, and I think as well, am I right in thinking, I don't know if they've operated yet, because they were going to operate, but then they couldn't because of the swelling on his face. So I don't know if he's had his operation, and obviously that's going to rule him out now for a good few months. I don't think we'll see him again until, I don't know, January, February time. So it's bad timing really for Little, especially, you know, having worked his way back in the side after having been out the last few games.
Yeah, so I mean, certainly, as you said, I mentioned before, we've mentioned it's a game of two halves, and it certainly was a game of two halves. Not by much, though, I've got to say. Going into the second half, certainly there was more urgency going forward. Law seemed to come out of his shell a wee bit more in this game. He was pretty quiet, and he seemed to get a lot of more challenges, and he was trying for a lot more as well. There was better skill anyway, certainly, but there was still a bit of lack of movement and a lack of finishing in the final third.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, Derek. I think as well, looking at that second half, you know, before we actually got the goal, I mean, we were kind of, the chances that were coming just weren't falling to us correctly, or we weren't looking like scoring, basically. And, you know, I think it was a relief to everyone when we finally did get the penalty, because there was a sense of relief, because, you know, the previous, however long, you know, 70 minutes just weren't particularly inspiring. So I think once we got the penalty, we could all relax a bit, especially once we obviously scored.
Dave, how much of the game did you see?
I basically saw the goals, just the highlights. Obviously, I was following the game on Twitter with everybody's comments. Just exactly like you guys said, very, very poor first half. People complaining about the tackles that were flying in for the Dunfermline players the whole of the first half. But when that's all we've got to tweet about in the first half, you know how poor the Rangers were playing. Going back to the Andy Little thing, it was instant. As soon as he was taking off, there was all the tweets that were coming in about how bad it looked, and certainly his face was like a pun of mince when he put it up on Twitter. So I don't know, like what you said, John, if he's actually been there. I've not heard if he's been for his surgery or not either, but we just hope he has a quick recovery.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, and you know, at least if the one thing that comes of it is maybe Clark will start getting his game now from the start, that's maybe the only silver lining to come of that.
Well, I think there's not really much more option, is there? Because, I mean, we're kind of a bit short up top at the moment. It does give Clark an opportunity to come in the side, and he's played the last couple. So he's started a few games now, and hopefully, you know, him and John Daly can form some kind of partnership, because aside from those two, it's really only Lee McCulloch that I think could come in and play up top, unless, you know, Ali's got ideas of bringing in some players in January, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. It's alright, you can maybe put Seb Forey up front, because he's tried him in the other position in the team anyway. But the one thing I think that this might be good for Clark is because he'll now be relaxed, he'll know that he's, you know, just about guaranteed a game. He's not really going to have to go out and really impress to keep his place in the team, which might relax him a bit more. So hopefully that'll prove to be good in front of goal, because I just feel that he's just needing a couple of goals just to get him, you know, settled in. And I've got a good feeling about him. I just hope it happens soon for him.
Yeah, certainly. Anyway, back to the game. As John said, the breakthrough came when Jig got a penalty in the 70th minute. He was brought down by the same player that elbowed him. The second yellow card, he was off the field. Jig obviously converted the penalty. Well, he didn't wait too much longer for the second goal. That was about 6 minutes later. It was really patient play from Rangers, taken into the box, then out again. Came to Forey, who hit a fantastic 35-yard punt into the box, which found an under-pressure Daly, who hits a looping header from about 15 yards into the back of the net. Absolutely fantastic. One of the few long-fielded balls into the box that actually paid off. That's the one thing about playing this long ball is, you know, we're trying a lot of them, and most of them aren't coming off, but there is always the one or two that does come off, and it seems to be Daly that's getting ahead to them all the time.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's a good target up top, and I've got to say that the delivery by Forey was absolutely fantastic, and I think you saw that when Daly did actually score. Forey was at the dugout right in front of us, and you know, he was getting congratulated big style by McCoish and Durant for such a fantastic ball. I didn't know he had that in his locker, to be honest.
No.
Very good.
Anyway, about 3 minutes later, we'd always do things the hard way. Dunfermline got a goal back, basically hit us on the break, came from absolutely nothing because they had virtually offered nothing up front all game. It was a wee bit of a problem with Bell, I thought. He hesitated about coming out for the ball. When he finally did come, he met the ball first, but it cannoned back off him. It came to the Dunfermline player, who basically had to pass it in the back of the net, and that was it. So, a bit of bad play from Bell. And one thing I'm going to say about Bell is, before we signed him, he's not somebody I would have said, yeah, Rangers, let's go and sign him. You know, but we've seen keepers in the past where we thought, he's fantastic, let's go and sign him. But Bell hasn't been one of the players, and I think for me the jury's still out on him. Maybe because he's not been tested so far.
I don't know, I think you're being overly harsh on him, to be honest, Del. I know you were at the game itself, you were quick to criticise when Dunfermline actually got their goal, but having watched it back, I don't know if there's too much more he could have done. You could say, yeah, he should have been out his line quicker, but I thought he'd done probably about as good as he could have done. You know, he did manage to get a blocked original shot, and to be honest, I think he was just unlucky that it fell to another Dunfermline player to pass in the net. But as far as Bell as a keeper, I think for the level that we're at, he's never been a keeper that's sufficiently impressed me either, to be honest. But I think for the level that we're at, he's more than fine.
Well, it's a young well-established goalkeeper playing for an SPL team at the time, Kilmarnock's number one. So I think it was a good choice of goalkeeper. There's a lot being said about wages and stuff like that that the guy's on, and we should maybe have stuck with Gallagher and things like that. But on paper, he certainly looked as if he was going to be a really good signing for us. But, he has had a few cock-ups. I think looking back to the Brechin game, he looked a bit dodgy in that one there. We'll just have to wait and see. But as you said, Derek, the jury's still out on him just now.
Yeah. So just after that, there was a shocking, shocking elbow on Black right in front of the dugout, right in front of the ref. The boy got a yellow card for it, but I mean, again, it was a straight red for me. I don't know what the hell the ref was playing at. One thing I will say is, I highlighted it to John at the start of the game, is there was no fourth official there. You've seen our kit man holding up the boards, and I did question that with John, and we couldn't understand it, but the commentary on the RTV did clarify that there was just no fourth official for that night. Now, on that, the fourth official would have seen that, because it would have been right in front of him. Is he allowed to advise the ref on anything at all?
Who, Jimmy Bell? Jimmy Bell, I'm sure, advise the
I'm sure he would if he got the chance.
Aye, no, it was a good point that you made, Del, because, yeah, I'd seen, for whatever reason, that I do remember Jimmy Bell holding the boards up in other games that we've played, so it's strange that in that particular night there wasn't the guy to hold up the boards, but surely, like, we were right in front of the challenge, and it really was shocking. I mean, the guy blatantly elbowed him. I was looking at the highlights the other night, and I think they conspicuously left that one out for whatever reason, because I don't remember seeing it again. But yeah, it was a poor challenge, just as bad as the McCulloch one in the first half.
Yeah. Right on the death, 92nd minute, Mojny scores again. The corner came in, keeper got a hand to it. Dunfermline player chested it, which fell to Mojny, who turns and hits the ball in the back of the net. Absolutely fantastic for the big guy. Keeps on scoring and scoring.
Yeah, he doesn't. He's not missing much opportunities at the moment. It was another composed finish. Just sort of slashed it in with his left foot after the goal he spilled it. But he's pretty prolific for a central defender. It'll be interesting to see, come the end of the season, you know, they can maintain his goal scoring form and see how many he can get.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that was the Dunfermline game anyway. Not great, to be honest. It was a wee bit better, you know, in the second half, but still, it was another 3 points. 100% record still intact, and at that point, went 14 points clear of second place Ayr United.
That's it, and I think just going back to the Dunfermline match, just another wee point. Jim Jefferies was going absolutely mental in his dugout for the majority of the game, if you can remember. Oh. We were right behind the dugouts, and Jefferies was practically on the pitch the whole game. He was just being his usual moaning face self, just shouting at the referee, shouting at his players, shouting at anyone who would listen, just being an annoying old man, basically. But he was entertaining to watch, if nothing else.
I quite like him, actually, for that fact. He's good entertainment value, anyway.
And also, Neil McCann was in the dugout, as you pointed out to me, Derek. I didn't even realise he was on the Dunfermline coaching staff, but there you go, he was...
Yeah, no, I didn't know that either,
as well.
No, it was the lugs of him I've noticed first, to be honest, but I thought it was a strange one. Even the guys behind us commented that, because they didn't hear Chloe was part of their background staff as well, so...
Yep, a man of many talents.
Yep. Right, so we'll move on to the most recent game, which was Saturday the 9th of November at Ibrox against Airdrieonians. Two changes to the side. There was Foray in for the injured Foster and Clark in for the injured Little. On the bench was pretty similar as well, but we had Krabari coming in and we had Smith coming in as well. Now, obviously it was the game before Remembrance Sunday. The guys who organised the card display, absolutely fantastic again, fantastically observed as well, minute silence. As always, impeccable by us. There was one of the big guns as well from the military just before to mark the start of it.
It was fantastic to see, Derek. I mean, I think one thing about Rangers is the card displays that we do are always pretty spectacular, and I think the game at the weekend was no exception. It was absolutely fantastic. The West We Forget and the poppies, it was nice to see. And like you say, the minute silence, as usual, impeccably observed.
Hats off to all the guys that did that. I mean, that's really hard work as well, getting a lot of people, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of volunteers will help it as well for something as big as that. So well done. It was good to see the poppies on the Rangers tops as well by all the players. That was excellent.
Yes. Now, one thing I mentioned on the last pod was Airdrieonians' chunky keeper. Mm-hmm. Or Beefy Keeper, even.
Yep, Beefy Keeper.
Yes, Beefy Keeper pod. Now, he wasn't allowed to play for the reasons I mentioned in the last podcast, where he wasn't registered with the SPFL, and they, again, wouldn't let him register. The reason why they had keeper issues, as I found out on the commentary on RTE, was...
I found out as well, yeah.
Yes, Scott Gallagher is on loan to them, and there's obviously a clause in his contract that he can't play against us, so...
Yeah, I had found that out after the match, actually, because I remember you talking about your favourite Beefy Keeper, and I didn't realise that it wasn't him that was in goals, and it was after, maybe about a day after, that I realised that Gallagher, that's the team he's actually on loan to.
Yeah. Some Rangers fans, I'll say, we don't even know who our players are loaned out to.
Exactly, exactly.
So, first half, it was certainly a better first half than we've seen in the last few games. There was certainly a lot more target, but nothing really clear cut. A lot of it was kind of straightforward stuff for the Ayr Dryden's keeper to get. Bell never had a save to make. We dominated the half once again, as we're always doing. Never looked like losing any possession or any goals or anything like that. Again, though, there was long high balls up to Daly. Wasn't getting a lot of defeat service. Templeton, once again, had a really, really bad game. He's getting the ball, maybe taking on one player, but then he's running into trouble straight away. He's not willing to take on the other players. And then Airdrie were just putting 11 men behind the ball most of the game. So regardless of if, you know, you're playing against part-time teams or not, if they put 11 men behind the ball, they crowd the midfield and the defence, it's going to be a hard breakdown for any team. It doesn't matter who you are.
That's when you rely really on your wingers, though, when you're getting that amount of resistance sort of in the middle of the park. That's when you're really needing to rely on your wingers to try and make some space, get some decent balls in. But David Templeton, he just is completely off the ball at the moment and not very reliable.
Yeah, well, that's it. I think Templeton, you know, even in the Dunfermline game, it looks like the last couple of games where he started, as you say, David, he's been off the boil. It looks like he's basically suffering from lack of confidence. Don't know what it is. You know, I think obviously he's been injured at the start of the season, and it's maybe taken him a while to get back in the team. But, you know, he's a player that I like, and I know you like as well, Dave. I think you've commented on it in earlier pods. So I kind of do hope that we stick with him through this, you know, over the next few weeks, and hopefully the increased playing time, you know, when he's playing every single week, will inspire him to sort of get back into something resembling the form that made us actually go out and buy him.
I know, we spoke about him a lot, and we do think he's got all the skill in the world. We were blaming at one point the possibly playing in the artificial pitches, that he was finding his touch and he just didn't look the player. But even on grass at the moment, he's still not looking that great. I just really hope he comes back and does what he was doing when he came in last season, because he was tearing teams to bits last season. Sometimes it was like a one-man show in certain games. It was the only shining light that we had, but this season he's just not been up for it at all.
No, certainly not. So that was really the first half. As I said, we were dominated. We never looked like losing a goal, but the chances were certainly a wee bit better, but it was straightforward for their keeper to pick up. Into the second half, we didn't need to wait too long, 38 seconds to be exact, where there was a great 50-50 tackle by Foray, so great determination to win the ball. Passes to Peralta, who put a fantastic cross in on the wide right. It was knocked on by the Airdrie player, who hit it onto the head of Daly, who bulleted it in the back of the net. Fantastic header again from Daly. Fantastic well-worked goal and great determination for Foray.
How many goals is that now that Daly scored? Is it 16 for the season?
I think that's 16, yeah.
Yeah, really good for Daly. It was a great goal. I haven't managed to see the second half, and I was really pleased, because you can see he's got so much confidence now that he has started scoring, and he just looks the main man up front at the moment.
That's it. And I think, you know, like you say, he's scoring all these goals, and I, for one, didn't expect him to be scoring at the rate that he's doing. I thought he would do a good job for us, but I didn't, you know, anticipate that he would be scoring, you know, quite as prolific as he is. So here's hoping it continues. It was great reactions for him. The ball came at him pretty quick, and great reactions to get the header on target, and it was great to get the goal, particularly so early in the second half, and kind of set the tone for the rest of the game.
Yep. Now, the first half suffered from straightforward things for the Airdrie keeper to pick up. This half we certainly tested him, especially from Clark. I mean, he had a couple of great chances where on the 48th minute it was great work from him and Black. Black ended up in the box. He takes on two players. Great pass to an open Clark, who hits a shot in the bottom right corner, and it forced a great save for the keeper. So it was a well worked goal, and we made making the keeper work. That's what, you know, when we're having shots on target, we should be making the keepers work for it if we're not going to put it in the back of the net. 54-minute, fantastic run down the left-hand side from Wallace. He takes on a player and skins the player. Great cross, Clark headers, and it came off the top of the bar. So again, another chance. It was a great chance as well.
It's good just that Clark's actually getting chances though, and whether it's the bar or good saves by the goalkeeper, at least he's still getting into these positions, you know, to do that, which he wasn't doing before. And I also feel, you know, a big plus for the second half was Nicky Law, because I thought he got into the game a hell of a lot more than he has been recently as well.
Mm-hmm. He seems to be coming onto a game in the second half like suppose the whole team in a way, so hopefully it's not one of these things where when the Law plays, the team play. We don't want to see us just being a one-man team effectively, so I hope that's no a sign of what that is.
I don't know if that's the case or not, because we've still been managing to win, because I think the Law's been, I'll almost say poor, but he's been well below his best in the last few games, and this was the one time that I had seen him actually step him up, and that was when I think the whole team gets a bit of a lift when he does start playing. So hopefully the whole team will take from that and they'll be driving forward just like he was, because I thought he played excellent in the second half.
I think Law as well, like you say, I think he's the type of guy that does take the game by the scruff of the neck, and if we're in a mire when we're not doing very much and we're struggling to make chances, he's the type of guy that, you know, can give him the ball and can make things happen. And like you say, I think he has shown signs the last couple of games getting back to the form that he was hitting right at the very beginning of the season, so he's hoping it continues.
Mm-hmm. There was a shot from Black on the 62nd minute from about 25 yards. It just went slightly over, clipping the bar. Just a minute after, Templeton drives the ball down into the box. The Airdrie player has a hand on him and drags him back down. Penalty. So who steps up again and takes it? Jig makes it 2-0.
Boom. I scored a great goal. Right in the middle. I'm getting my penalties mixed up now, but I think that was the one where he hit it straight down the middle, hit it as hard as he could, and don't think any keeper's going to save that. But it was good to see. I mean, on the subject of Templeton, you know, he won the penalty. So although the games he's been having recently, he's not been in the best of form, it's good to see he's still involved, and he's still, in this instance, he got us a penalty and helped win us the game, really.
Mm-hmm. Really, the rest of the half just played kind of out like that, as we had a few good chances as well. Again, Airdrie never actually done anything up front. I think they maybe had one shot where it was a comfortable save from Bell. That was in the 65th minute, actually. It was a free kick. That was really the only major thing that they had done all game. So overall, second half, I mean, me and Dave were talking about it. We were at work at the time, and, you know, we've seen the stats that we had a lot of shots on target. So it was good to see. Certainly the second half, we made the keeper work. It was good saves from their keeper, basically just really prevented it from being a bigger scoreline.
I think, yeah. Did we say something like 15 shots on target or something like that, which I was speaking to someone else that I know that was at the game who thought that Rangers had played really poorly and it was a terrible game. But going by when I seen the second half, it certainly looked as if we were creating a hell of a lot more chances than we have been recently, which is quite encouraging, I think.
Yes, absolutely. So that leaves us with 12 games gone, still the 100% record. We are 14 points clear of the next team, which is Dunfermline, and we have plus 41 goal difference as well.
So I think, do you think we're safely going to break the 100 goal mark this season then?
I would say that's a good bet.
Great statistics, and I believe the only club, I've covered this before, that we're still, you know, we're the only club in the whole of Europe that has a 100% league record, I think. So, well done. I know that everybody's expecting us to do it, you know, and all the people out there that don't support Rangers keep saying, oh, well, look at the teams you're playing. But that is excellent, just, you know, to keep going and keep winning the games, and not even drop them a couple of points when we've had off days and things like that. It's absolutely brilliant.
So, the next game, on a strange night for us, is Monday the 25th of November, away to Arbroath.
I take it that's live on the TV somewhere.
It's an 8 o'clock kickoff, so I'm not too sure what the score is with that game.
I remember reading about it, actually, now that you mention it. Something tells me it's not on the telly, but I don't know why it's on a Monday night. It must be something Saturday. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I might be completely wrong on that, but it is strange as well, the fact that it's an away game, you know, and, you know, you're obviously asking fans to go up to Arbroath on a Monday night. It's not the best, really, is it?
No. Right, that's bizarre. You would have thought that they'd have been either Sky or BT Sports or something like that.
Yeah, because that's not even the rearranged game, is it, for the Forfar game, I think it was?
No, I don't think so, no.
No. So,
no, that's a strange one.
Bit of a strange one, but I'm hoping, obviously, we're going to maintain our 100% record, and I'm sure it'll be a a challenge for us.
Yeah, it's always a difficult place to go, especially when it's horrible weather as well. But here's hoping the guys can just knuckle down and get another 3 points out of it.
Yep. That's it. Right, we're going to move on now and we're going to go into the Blue Room.
Quite simply, we're the only club in the world who could do that. We are the people.
Right, so another busy week as usual for us on the off-field department. It's going to be great when we don't actually have to have a Blue Room section and everything gets sorted down, but still, we're keep going at it. So the first thing that happened, very, very strange thing, is Rangers appoint a interim chairman in the name of David Summers. Now, from these stats, he looks, you know, fairly reasonable, but Malcolm Murray came out and said that in his 30-odd years in the business in London, he's never heard of him, so I don't know what that's all about. And again, with only what, 5 weeks now to the AGM, really, what is the point?
It's a bit of a strange one for anybody to be taking up a job at Rangers at the moment, you know, when the chance they could only be in it for maybe a very short space of time. So definitely a strange one for me, definitely.
I can only agree. I think as well the appointment of David Summers, and as well, I'm sure you'll get on to another director on the board, the fact that, you know, we're however many weeks away from the AGM, it really is strange, like you say, Derek. You know, what is the point when, you know, potentially these guys are not going to be here in, you know, 5-6 weeks' time?
Yeah, I mean, certainly got the raised suspicions of Jim McCall as well, where he stated he was bemused by the appointment, basically just obviously because the AGM started to come up. Why are these people going to be taking a job for 6 weeks? One thing I am really getting sick and fed up of, though, is these people who have no affiliation to Rangers whatsoever, they're coming in straight away, wearing the tie, getting the coat on, and they're in the trophy room saying, oh yes, I've been a supporter and all this, blah, 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 blah. Save it, because we've heard it all before, and a lot of it's turned out to be bullshit. Now, fair enough, you know, the guy might be coming in with the best intentions, but he's been appointed by this corrupt board, basically. So what is the reason for him being there? And he surely knows, if he knows anything about Rangers, he's surely got to take stock of the fans' reaction. And I would say a majority of them now don't know who to believe. So, of course, we're not going to be trusting of him. And why would you want to take up a position just on that basis alone?
That's it. I think you look at the board, Derek, and like you say, anyone that's getting appointed by the current board, suspicions are going to be there straight away. And the fan base, I think at this particular moment in time, we're obviously not going to be trusting anyone that the current regime is appointing. And I think David Summers, I don't think people know a lot about the guy, but I think the support at large have got every right to be sceptical about the whole appointment.
I mean, it's even got your good pal, your Bill, talking about it as well just after it got appointed. One quote that came out of his blog just after that, it says that one thing that will help is a strong board packed with people of great competence and impeccable credentials. Now, what he failed to put in that is with Rangers at heart. Now, I've no doubt that these people who have been appointed, are going to be potentially appointed, have got all the credentials. I'm pretty sure Stockbridge has got credentials, but not with a footballing background and not with Rangers at heart. So that's the crux of the matter here. We need people with Rangers at heart, not just some unknown that comes out of the blue and gets appointed by these directors. We need Rangers men on that board.
I think you're right there, Derek. It's I don't think the supporters are, you know, we're never really going to trust anyone that's out of the circle, if you know what I mean. I think everybody needs to know that these are football men and Rangers men at heart before we're going to get trust from all the supporters. And I think the fact that Bill's maybe hyping him up a wee bit is going to put even more people off him, I think. His blogs are hilarious, though, because his newest one linking us with the ex-English FA chief executive, Rick Parry, as well, I think is absolutely hilarious as well, you know. So some of the stuff he comes out with is just brilliant, I think. It's like I said before, it's always good bedtime reading, I think, when you read Bill's blog.
Well, it's certainly comedy, anyway.
Definitely.
Right, and the next thing that comes out, to be honest, it's a bit of a non-story hyped up by the media once again, is that documents from the Pinsent Masons report have been passed over to the police in relation to the investigation into Craig White. Now, the media whipped this up into a big frenzy about, oh, look what's happening now, the police are now getting involved. I'm still led to believe that there's still an ongoing police investigation into the links with Craig White and Ibrox and what he done.
That's right.
Clearly just going to be a follow-up information about what that report held, what did they find out, and it'll be subsequent evidence to their investigation.
The Daily Record absolutely loves any kind of negative story with Rangers. You know the way that I feel about the Daily Record. And it wasn't even that part that really got me. It was the part that they had to add in that if, and that was the big if, Rangers were found guilty of any wrongdoings, then they could, and again, in capital letters, could have their licence taken away, which would effectively be the end of Rangers. How many times have the Daily Record used that phrase, yes, this could be the end of Rangers over the last year? It's absolutely pathetic. You just know the hordes of people who are buying this and taking it all in as well. Certainly aren't wearing royal blue and white scarves on a Saturday. It's absolutely pathetic by the Daily Record. They're going to try and do anything to sell newspapers. It was them that whipped it up big time. I mean, I believe they had like two pages full front page as well as, you know, another two pages inside. Absolutely pathetic. As you say, there's still an ongoing investigation with the police. They basically got to look into everything, a complete non-story, and just it's just pathetic. But again, it is just to sell newspapers and just to have a popular club, and that's all it is, basically.
That's it. I think, like you guys say, it's much ado about nothing. As Dave says, just, you know, Daily Record's attempt to sell more newspapers and bash our club at every opportunity, basically.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, no one to say too much about it because it is an ongoing police investigation, so we didn't want to get any kind of letters to us or anything like that about any cease and desist or anything, so we'll just leave that there as it is now. After that, obviously, our pal Jack was at it again with a totally nonsensical statement about the speculation about what's happening, and it was going on about the company's company and the company's company's this, and it didn't make a lot of sense to me. Load of waffle, load of bullshit, nobody cares, Jack, give up.
It's getting all the supporters now have kind of turned from being annoyed at what he's putting out to, you know, we're not even going to really bother commenting on the amount of stuff that he's putting out, because I think everybody just realises that there's nothing that's coming out of Rangers media at the moment is trustworthy, because it's all coming for him. So I don't really think he's getting a lot of reaction anymore like he was at the beginning.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he's kind of affectionately known, well, affectionately is probably the wrong term, as toxic Jack. And I think the name pretty much fits him very well.
Next was, really, it just happened today, actually, as John mentioned earlier, the appointment of a new non-executive director, Norman Crichton. Again, just the exact same with appointing a chairman. What really is the point? They're all up for reappointment anyway, come the AGM. So, clearly, if the Murray Group have got as much backing from the shareholders as they say they have got, then these people are not going to be in a job in about 5-6 weeks' time. So, really, what is the point?
As I say, I had a wee look at Al Bill's blog again, but again, what Bill's saying is that Crichton's CV is very impressive, and this is a clear signal of intent by the board that they intend to build a strong off-field team to take the club forward, at least for the next 6 weeks anyway.
Yeah.
But and that's about it. To be honest, I really don't see what's going to happen. The vast majority of shareholders will be looking at this and saying, you know, what are we thinking? What's going on? So close to the AGM, what the hell's going on at the moment? It's just another farce by the board and the club at the moment. Off the field, nobody seems to know what the hell's going on. And we've said it, I don't know how many times, the sooner that the AGM comes and we can hopefully start afresh, the sooner the better.
The next story to come out today was about the Dundee CEO, Scott Gardner, turns down his role that was apparently offered to him as our CEO. A bit of a strange one altogether. The news report's got here that it's understood that Dens Park chief executive indicated to the club hierarchy on Wednesday night that he was going to stay at Dundee. So it's got here that earlier this week it's believed that Mr Gardner held talks with a headhunter acting on behalf of Rangers looking to fill the vacant chief executive role at Rangers. What the fuck is a headhunter?
A head what?
A headhunter, I don't know. What the hell is a headhunter getting involved with Rangers for? It should be the board members directly, not the, well, I suppose we've got a lack of boardmen, but, you know,
exactly.
What is a headhunter doing, you know, doing these things? Is that a usual thing? I don't know.
I've got no idea, and I don't know if it's just that I take it as someone affiliated with the board, or do they mean that the headhunter was, you know, a non-exec board member that we've got? We've not got many to go, you know, to go for. I've got no idea, but you can really see, I don't think there'd be many people that would turn down quite a well-paid job to possibly come in and take over. I suppose it would be a dream job to some people, but the chances that you're going to get to keep that in a couple of months' time would be very slim. So I really can't say I blame the guy for not taking the job.
Well, I think from all things that I've read, it does appear that Scott Gardner is a Rangers fan, and most of the things that I've read as well would seem to indicate he's done the right thing by turning the job down, because I think anything appointed by the current regime, it's a poison chalice right there. It's not going to end well, and I think he, as a fan, realises that, and as Dave says, I don't think you can blame him, because like he says, I think the fact that he's a Rangers fan, for most people that would be a dream job, especially if he's a CEO, but in the current state that the club's in and the board's in, I think he's done the right thing, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great indictment for the current regime then, isn't it? That if, you know, a Rangers fan who also has had, I don't know if it's been a board member, but he's been linked, has had previous dealings with Rangers and Tottenham.
I believe, is he not an ex-employee of Rangers in the media side of things? And I believe the story came out that he'd had some sort of disagreement or disagreement with ex-chief executive Martin Bain, and that was the reason that he left. So I believe he is an actual ex-employee of the club.
I mean, it's got here that he had, you know, a previous role at Rangers and Tottenham. But I mean, as I said, so obviously this guy is a Rangers fan. He's had previous dealings with us in the background, and it's obviously a shocking indictment for the current regime that this fan would, and this previous employee would, turn them down. You know, that's just, again, proof of the pudding that surely this has got to be the death throes of this board.
I think it kind of plays right into the so-called rebel shareholders. McCall Co, as the Daily Record sensationalises it, I think it plays right into their hands. I think they're saying to themselves, well, you know, look, or they're trying to show everybody out there for the AGM coming up, look at the state of the club's in at the moment. You know, they can't even get a CEO in at the moment. You know, guys like that are turning us down, so we need some change. So it's maybe just going to play right into their hands.
Right, so that's, I mean, what's kind of a brief summary of what's happened in the boards and off the field in the last kind of week and a half. So, again, we know every week we're going to be talking about this kind of thing, and as I said, I just can't wait till we have to get rid of the Blue Room section and just we can focus on, you know, the football and the fun times back in the club again, because that's what, you know, we're a football club, that's what it should be about. And for the fact that we had an absolute horror year last year with the kind of administration liquidation, did we even know we're going to be a club? We thought we were getting it sorted out with Charles Green. Now, obviously, history's told us that no, that's not the case. We're still getting crazy White coming up. It's a joke. It could only happen to us, and we certainly, you know, we don't make it easy for ourselves sometimes, but there just has to be an end in sight, surely.
I've got a horrible feeling, Derek, and we spoke about this when it came out that the Green was leaving, that we were going to have about a year of off-the-field boardroom battles with, like, a tug-of-war to see who was going to be in charge. I've got a horrible feeling that this is going to go on a lot longer after the AGM also. We'll probably still be sitting talking about things like this next year. I hope no, but I've just got a horrible feeling that we will be.
Yeah, I've got that feeling as well, unfortunately.
Definitely.
But anyway, we'll move on anyway, and we will cover the classic match now.
Manchester, brace yourself. Rangers are coming!
Dave, what classic match have you got for us this week?
Right, I put up a wee clip on Twitter earlier on just to give everybody a wee sort of sneak peek. It was a picture of our man Gaza celebrating with an Aberdeen player in the background. So I'm going to cover a match that I was, again, lucky enough to be at Ibrox on that day. It took place on the 24th of April 1996. Rangers, of course, were going for eight in a row. This, I believe, was the last home match that we had in the league that season. A victory over Aberdeen was going to seal the league championship for us. So it was a must-win game for us to be there in front of all our supporters so that we could bring the league title home. I was having a wee look, as I always do, at the players that we had brought in that season, or Walter Smith had brought in that season. There was a few that he had signed. We'd signed Stephen Wright, who had a disastrous career with us with injury. Of course, we got Gazza. Oleg Salenko came in. Don't know if you guys can remember much about some of these players playing for us, but Salenko was about the fourth choice. Smith was going out to try and sign a player, and he tried to sign a guy who was a Romanian World Cup player that season called Radu Choiu. I don't know if you've heard of him or not. He was supposed to be quite good, but we didn't get him. We tried for a few others, and eventually we got Oleg Salenko after he'd scored, I think, 5 goals in one game in the World Cup. So we signed him thinking we were going to get a superstar, but it turned out that he didn't really do much for us. We also signed Gordon Petrich. We also signed Derek McInnes, Eric Bo Anderson, Theo Snelders, and, of course, the man with the famous Miss Peter Van Vossen. So they came in that season. So on that day that Rangers were going, the game against Aberdeen, Rangers lined up with Andy Gorham in goals, David Robertson, Richard Goff, Alan McLaren and John Brown in defence, Trevor Stephen, Gordon Jury, Paul Gascoigne, Eric Bo Anderson, Stuart McCall, and I've got down here God. I think we all know who God is.
Eric Clapton.
You're a sad man. And the Aberdeen team that day, a few sort of famous, well, no say famous, but a few sort of well-known players in the team, Watt, McKimmy, Smith, Rowson, Big Brian, Irvin, Ingalls, Paul Bernard, Dean Windy Ass, Scott Booth, Stephen Glass, and our ex-player Billy Dodds played in that match. The game kicked off. I was sitting not in my usual govern front seat, but I was actually in the west enclosure for this game. It was a really nice day. Everybody had short sleeves on that day. It was really warm. Everybody was well up for it. The noise, as usual, was incredible. I believe the corners at Ibrox were actually getting renovated because there was no supporters in the corners at that point. They were still getting, say, all the seats and everything put in there and the big screens going in. So we kind of kicked off. The noise had kind of died down. Things opened up in the 19th minute. Inevitably, Aberdeen scored the first goal against us.
19 and a half minutes gone now. Still no scoring here at Ibrox Stadium. Perhaps a chance for the Dons. And it's Goff who's here, and it's Irvin! And Aberdeen sensationally take the lead!
It was a corner whipped in. The ball sort of ricocheted off Richard Goff and fell perfectly for Big Brian Irvin, their centre half, who hit it on the volley inside the 6-yard box. There's really nothing that Gorham could have done. Whacked it into the net, stunned the whole of Ibrox. Aberdeen fans were going mad because you know how much Aberdeen fans really dislike us, so they were going absolutely mental when they scored that. But luckily for us, we didn't have long to wait. I think Walter Smith kind of came out and gave the players a rollicking. 21st minute, only 2 minutes later.
There's Gascoigne now, can he produce some magic? Still it's Gascoigne! Oh yes!
We got a corner again. I've got down here God with the corner. He played the ball short just to the edge of the box, and then just an absolutely incredible run by Gazza. He gets the ball up, he does this sort of double shuffle. I'm sure it was Billy Dodds that tried to defend it. He made an absolute arse, Billy Dodds, and just sprinted past him. He passed a sort of another two defenders, and then at like a tight angle, he just managed to turn his hip to the right at a tight angle, and absolutely thundered the shot past Watt and goals. And I think if Watt had his head in the right place, it would have taken his head right off his shoulders because it absolutely melted it right into the goal. It was an absolutely brilliant goal that he scored, Gazza. It was like such an impact at that point. It totally got all the supporters well up for it. You could see that he was well up for it as well, and it sent us on on our way. We'd had quite a few chances after that. Alan McLaren, believe it or not, had hit the bar twice in the first half. We couldn't get the breakthrough. And then into the second half, trying and trying, it was still 1-1. It wasn't good enough for us to win the league at Ibrox again. And I think we've heard all the stories about somebody turning to Gaza. I don't know if it was Stuart McCall or something, saying, you know, come on, Gaza, we need something here. Time's running out. And then we managed to get a break. It was actually an Aberdeen throw-in, but we managed to get the ball.
Here's Gascoigne now, pushing forward. Showing great determination! Rangers 2, Aberdeen 1.
It broke to Gaza, who was in his own half, started sprinting towards the Aberdeen goal. But if you watch it back, you can actually see the part that Brian Loudrup played in the goal, because Loudrup could see what he was going to do, and he ran diagonally across him, which basically took two of the Aberdeen defenders with him. So it was great play, and Gaza just basically kept going. He kept going faster and faster. He gets into the box, there's like three players round about him, and he just hits the ball with his left foot and curls it right round the goalkeeper into the net. Absolutely sensational goal. Everybody goes mental. It was Gaza at his best, just sheer impact for the man. You know, he was one of the best in the business at doing that. Absolutely brilliant for Gaza. The whole place is going mad. We could sense we're going to win the league. And then we kicked off again. Brian Loudrup gets the ball, plays a fantastic ball to Gordon Jury.
It's Jury in possession. Robertson's arriving as well. And Jury goes down. That's a penalty. It's a penalty.
Gordon Jury does his usual, head down, runs as fast as he can, which Gordon Jury was very good at, right into the box. He gets brought down, penalty to Rangers. We knew we were going to do it, and who else is going to step up to seal the hat-trick and win us the league? Gaza.
Gascoigne is going to take this one, and Gascoigne has already scored from the penalty spot. This is the hat-trick of the championship. Minutes gone, and Rangers have won the championship. Gascoigne has scored the hat-trick.
There was just no hesitation whatsoever by him. You can see that as well. He put the ball down, he took four or five strides backwards and just ran up and passed it perfectly into the bottom of the goal, past the goalkeeper, wins Rangers the league. It was just a masterclass for Gascoigne in that day. Again, any of our younger listeners out there, if you've never seen this, go in and watch it on YouTube to see Paul Gascoigne, the goals that he scored in this game. Sheer class. He lifted the whole team and the whole stadium, and I think that'll just always be known as the Gaz Show, that game. So,
well, goes the final whistle. Rangers are champions for the eighth consecutive season. They're champions for the ninth time in 10 years, and they're champions for the 46th time in their history.
I don't know if you guys can remember much about it at the time, but I know you have definitely watched it back, and just sensational.
That's it. I think I'd watched it back on YouTube just in preparation. I do actually remember it fairly well from when it happened. I remember it being live on the telly back on STV, Jerry McNee being the commentator and something like that, Jim White in the studio. Good times. But I mean, it was the Gaza Show, like you said, and the second goal in particular was just amazing. I think it was Alan McLaren actually who'd whispered in his ear, basically. I think Gaza was dying on his arse. It was like, I don't know what time in the match it was, about 60, 70th minute or something, quite close to the end. He was on his arse and McLaren whispers in his ear, you know, go and win it for us or something along those lines. And he picks the ball up, like you said, in his own half, and the strength that he showed to sort of out-muscle two or three Aberdeen players in his way, and the shot and the finish was absolutely class. And like you say, you know, Gaza was just inspired. I think it was his finest performance in a Rangers jersey.
Oh, it was absolutely stunning play from Gaza. Just always been known as the Gaza game. And what struck me as well is I was always under the impression that Gazza signed for us kind of later on in his career, but no, he was still in his prime when he signed for us. And When you looked when I looked back at the game and I seen his goals, especially for the first one, it was his close touch was absolutely phenomenal he had with the ball. I mean, that by rights, that Aberdeen player who slid in there should have got that ball easy, but Gazza, just magical feet, just the way he kind of taken it around the guys and still kept the ball stuck to his feet all the time. It was absolutely amazing. Great day all round, absolutely stunning game, and you know, obviously 8 in a row. I did think at the time, and I don't know what came over me at the time here, but they had 8 obviously on the kind of celebration shirts, and I thought, is that because Gazza, he wears the number 8? You know? But oh, I don't know why I was thinking that. I knew it was 8 in a row, but I thought, oh, that was a tribute to it. But
We spoke about this earlier on, Derek, about the calibre of the player. Paul Gascoigne was world class, possibly at that time when he signed for Rangers, possibly one of, if the most famous players in the world at that point, signing for Rangers. And we had a wee discussion in it, you know, about the calibre of the club that we are, to be able to have attracted a player like that. And you had said to me, you know, we were spending a lot of money at that time. But again, he could have went to nearly any club in England, and as you told me, there was a chance for him to sign for Chelsea, and when he heard that we were in for him, you know, there was no hesitations for him to come and sign. So it just it shows us the size of the club that we are, and I know that we've been in the doldrums recently, but it shows you the size of the club that, you know, that we are, and we will be again. I've got no doubt about that. For the fact that we were able to sign somebody like Paul Gascoigne, as you say, in his prime, when he could have had the choice in nearly any team in England, any team, you know, in Europe, it's just absolutely fantastic. He was a great player for us, and it's something that we should always remember, guys. I know he's had a lot of really bad times over the last couple of years, but I think every Rangers fan, when they talk about Paul Gascoigne, we've all got a smile on our face because we know how much an incredible player he was for us.
It's just amazing to think we could get that calibre player back then, and as you said, I'm sure in time we'll get back to that kind of standard.
I certainly hope so.
That's the thing as well. I mean, like, I don't think you can overstate it enough. Like, you know, signing Gazza was massive. It was absolutely massive at the time. You know, he was probably, like, as you say, Dave, like one of the most famous footballers around at that time. So for him to be signing for Rangers, like, I remember it. You know, half my schoolmates at the time had got the bleach blonde haircut.
I was just about to say that you wouldn't have known loads of folk that went out and got their hair bleached, because I certainly knew tons and tons of guys, and believe it or not, I was actually contemplating it getting done myself, and I shit myself at the last minute and I didn't get it done. So but you know how black my hair is, Derek. I'd have looked like a right fucking bros out with my big thick black eyebrows and this white hair, you know. But
and curls as well.
No, I could have had it cut short, like, definitely. But no, it was just a great era to be a Rangers fan, having all these class players all round about us, and we get slagged off by everybody saying, aye, that's been the downfall your club, but everybody enjoyed it. Everybody, as I say, always had fond memories of Gazza, and we wish him all the best. We know that he's going through a pretty hard time at the moment, so we wish Gazza all the best, and thanks for the memories.
Right, so we'll move on now, and we will talk about the news.
Good evening, I'm Will McAvoy. Will McAvoy. I'm Will McAvoy. Good evening, I'm Will McAvoy. This is Newsnight from New York City. I'm Will McAvoy.
First thing that comes out of it was just after the game there at the weekend is that Rangers were meant to be playing Celtic under-20s in a game, and for some unknown reason, Celtic have pulled out that match. No reason given, still to get any further confirmation about what the hell went on, but for some reason they pulled out. Now, I don't know if the under-20s are in the league or no, but for me that would be, you know, a 3-0 victory for us, and points awarded then, surely.
Do we know any reason as to why they would want to pull out an under-20 match? Or, I mean, has there anybody had any rumours as to why it happened? I've not seen anything at all in anywhere, you know.
I'm sure that I saw somewhere that there was some suggestion that it was due to international call-ups. Once again, that old chestnut, a few of their boys getting called up to the under-19s or something like that. But I think the very nature of it being so last minute, it's a bit fishy if you ask me.
It was meant to be played on Tuesday there, and there was speculation amongst, you know, some of the supporters. Maybe it's because that there's been known issues with them and observing 1-minute silences, so I don't know.
would they be having the 1 minute silence under 20 game after Remembrance Sunday?
I don't know. I obviously don't attend under 20 games, but it'd be interesting to see if they do, and if that would have been the reason, because apparently there's been some issues with that before in the 20s game. So I don't know. As John said, something fishy there.
You're getting all political on us here, Derek. So
come on.
Definitely. That's you getting the death threats. Not as we're safe, John. Derek came away with that one.
Right. Next, that's a good segue into the next thing here, as a very, very strange one, and I don't think too many people believe it, but Ross County have apologised for not holding a minute's silence on Remembrance Sunday. The reason was that the mistake happened, and it happened due to a mix-up due to changes in staff responsibility. That's complete tosh, isn't it?
Aye, I think we can all smell the bullshit there, to be perfectly honest with you. Again, without going into it too much, I think we all know the reason why it didn't happen. It was live in the TV also, so I think that had a huge part to play. Again, I really don't want to talk about them if I have to avoid it, because I really didn't want to waste my time and speaking about anything to do with them. I don't know what your feelings is on it, John.
Aye, pretty much the same as yours. I think something's definitely up. I think, as Derek says, you know, I call bullshit on the statement that was released. I think it wasn't just Ross County. There was a couple of other sides, wasn't there? Maybe Hibs as well.
Yeah.
They'd somehow forgotten to actually hold a minute of silence, which just, it sounds strange to me, if we're being completely honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's a national day. You surely don't forget these type of things, so regardless of who your staff are. So it's a bit strange, but we'll leave that one there. That's, you know, just another case in point of the bullshit that you really get fed, and the media seem to lap it up, so we'll leave that one there.
Well, certainly lack of coverage in the media as well. The silence was deafening, but I think we've said all we need to say, and I think we really all know what's going on. But moving on,
we'll leave it there, Dave.
Yes, definitely.
Right, so the next thing, getting off Rangers altogether in Scottish football, there was a wild boar attack on a field in the Forest of Dean Football Club pitch. Basically, wild boars have caused havoc at the home ground of a non-league football club by tearing up the pitch twice in the space of 1 week. Apparently, the damage is going to cost about £1,000 and it's not going to be playable for about a month.
Where was this about?
This was, God, where is it?
A wild boar.
A wild boar. Their pitch is obviously no stands or anything like that. They're a non-league club. It's right next to a bit of a wooded area where wild boars roam, and their pitch get ripped up. So
it sounds something like an Asterix comic here, wild boar and things like that. So no, that's bizarre, totally bizarre.
Right. No, the place is Forest of Dean.
And Forest of Dean.
Aye, and the club, Gloucester Northern Senior League side, Soudley AFC.
Oh, so it's in England then?
Aye.
Wild boar in England. There you go.
Aye.
I don't know, is that?
I bet there's plenty of pigs anyway, but no boar. There you go.
Right. Something me and Dave were talking about earlier was Joey Barton himself getting into a wee bit of mischief today as well. Did you see this one, John?
I don't know what you're referring to, so I don't think so, no.
Can't remember the teams, but basically, he plays for QPR, doesn't he?
Yes. Yeah. Right, QPR.
Aye, so he was playing for QPR. There was a stoppage in the game.
Oh, no, I did see this, yeah.
Yes, and one of his former teammates was down on the ground with a slight groin injury. So what does Joey Barton do? Nonchalantly walks up to him, gets his foot and starts rubbing it across his groin, you know, to the player who was down in the ground, you know.
A ball massage.
Is this something that's maybe been picked up in France, possibly? No? Along with his dodgy accent.
Right. maybe. I don't know. What they do in France.
What you say, Derek. The fact that he's played with this guy before, Danny
Guthrie.
Really?
Guthrie, I think. Really? Aye, exactly.
I think he played with
him.
Allegedly. He's obviously partaking in some banter during the game.
He was just making sure the deep peat was reaching the right places, I think.
Exactly.
The next one I've got here is Martin O'Neill launches a devastating attack on Paolo Di Canio. The headline says that, not me. Anyway, O'Neill has branded Di Canio a managerial charlatan, basically criticising criticising his management skills there. Basically, you know, taking the piss out of him effectively about what went on there. Obviously on about the things about, you know, taking tomato sauce away from them and things like that. And it was a pretty scathing attack on him, and leaves De Canio surely in no certain terms what O'Neill thinks about him.
It was a strange appointment at the beginning. I remember when it happened, as soon as I seen that Sunderland had appointed De Canio, you just knew it was going to be an absolute disaster of an appointment, because, you know, he had been the manager of Swindon. There had been players revolted against him. I think there was the problem with his goalkeeper. He substituted his goalkeeper and had a big massive stand-up row with him at the side of the pitch in front of all the supporters and everything like that. He just knew that it was going to be an absolute disaster, and it turned out to be there. I think also in Swindon, he had been given his books, and they had all the locks and everything all changed, and he turned up in the middle of the night and he was trying to break back into the office that he was in before. So, I mean, he just these type of things... Lower league managers is bad enough, but when you're actual manager at a Premier League club, it doesn't wash, and you just knew that it was going to be an absolute shambles, and it turned out to be that as well.
I think De Canio, it was a disaster waiting to happen, his appointment. So I think O'Neill's probably pretty spot on with his comments, to be honest. But no doubt someone will pick De Canio up again, and we'll go through this all over again, because he's a bit of a loose cannon, and to be fair, he's quite interesting, and, you know, he makes football a wee bit more interesting just with his antics. But I think, as Dave says, I think at the Premier League level you kind of get away with some of the stuff that he does. Like
the next one I've got here, and the last one, totally away from football altogether, it was just something a bit strange that was in the news within the last week there. Protester nails scrotum to Red Square cobbles.
I heard about this, actually.
Yes.
No, right, on you go.
Artist Peter Pavlensky is facing prison.
Is he a piss artist?
He must be, eh? Well, he's facing prison over the stunt, which he claims was a metaphor for political apathy in Russia. A Russian performance artist has been arrested after stripping naked and nailing his scrotum to a cobblestone in Red Square in a protest of what he called the country's descent into a police state. Well...
I'm sure the police did not go. I saw the article in the BBC News, and they did have a photo of him. Like, the police had strategically placed a jacket over his nether region to sort of protect him and others, I guess, from the sight that they would see. But I mean, that's another level of performance artistry, if you ask me. Well, it's out there.
Apparently, according to this article here, it's not the first time he's done it. Previous artistic efforts have included sewing his lips together in protest at the imprisonment of Pussy Riot. great name. Wrapping his naked body in barbed wire outside the St. Petersburg Parliament in May, and he faces up to 15 days in prison for his latest work. So, I don't know, is it worth the cause?
Worth it, mate.
So, it just shows you these Fathers for Justice guys have really got a tough act to follow then, really, rather than just dressing up as Batman and climbing up a building, you know, takes it to a whole new level.
Yes, so also we've got USA team, the national team, training at Auchinhowie just now with a couple of notable faces, haven't we?
Yeah, that's right. It was good to hear DeMarcus Beasley. He had quite a good thing to say about Rangers, talking about how huge a club we were, and he had no doubts that we would be back winning the Premier League title, being back in the Champions League in no time. So it was great to, you know, hear that he still thinks so highly of the club. I think there'll be a few people will be torn on Friday night. I know I might get slagged off for this, but I do cheer on my national team, even though, although we've not got a lot of players. I just hope and pray that Wallace gets in, because I think it'll be great for our club if we get Wallace playing back in the national team for Scotland. I think it shows how much a quality player he is, and even though we're playing in this league, it'd be a great achievement if he was in the national team. So, but good luck to both sets of players anyway, you know, ex-Rangers players as well. I just hope they put on a good show.
And Dave, you showed me a picture of who was one of the coaches there as well.
Yep, it's Chris Woods, which I was quite surprised about, considering he is a full-time goalkeeping coach at Manchester United. But he was there's a few pictures of him and Super Ali getting their pictures taken, you know, so it's certainly a good Rangers connection with the USA team.
So I was surprised to see Chris Woods there myself. I think he's he's, you know, part of the USA set up thanks to Tim Howard, I think, who was, you know, obviously the goalkeeping coach at Everton for all those years. So I think it's something to do with that. But like you say, he's got a full-time job at Man United now. So it was strange to see him at Murray Park. I think that was the first time that he's been back up the road in a number of years. So it was good to see his face at Murray Park again.
Yeah. So that's pretty much just about it for this week. Just a few wee housekeeping things we've got. If you want to contact us, you can certainly do it through our Twitter page, which is at iReadyPod. We've got an email address, which is iReadyPod@hotmail.com. And we've also got a Facebook account as well, which is just basically facebook.com/iReadyPod. So certainly drop us a line either way. Just to say, thanks very much, John. Once again, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on.
Yeah, cheers, guys. Thanks once again for having me on. I'll maybe be back on at some point in the future. Appreciate it.
Well, calm down now. I don't know about that. Yep, so just to say, thanks very much and goodbye.
Yes, guys. Take care. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks, John. I'm sure we'll have you on again very soon. Cheers.
That's what she said.
Aye. Aye. It took 3 seconds. Great finish.
I've got some movement here. I'm not talking about my bowels.